Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine, NHL.com, joins us. As always, Woodley, how you doing? Happy belated New Year.
To you, too. I'm good. Thanks.
All right. We gave you a little homework assignment. So, because Oilers fans have been wondering, geez, are they going to lose Lauren Brossoit, right? Teams have to – Vegas has to draft three goalies. Well, they can technically draft more, but I doubt they're going to be drafting a bunch of goalies if they're going to lose them all to waivers and such. And that's where Brossoit, to me, like, there's younger goalies who don't require waivers. So even if you get two veterans and you want to have some goaltending depth, you can put that guy in the minors for a year and not have to worry about waivers, whereas Brossoit, you would have to. So my gut instinct tells me the Oilers won't lose him. What's your research tell you?
Well, there's about four pages of it in front of me, and you nailed on the head one of the key points. What is the point of loading up on goaltenders if you don't have a place to put them? And so I think the fact Brossoit requires waivers means it is very, very unlikely that the Edmonton Oilers lose him in the expansion draft, combined with the fact that, frankly, there's younger guys with more upside and don't have waiver requirements for at least one more season that are going to be available in this expansion draft. So his name is well down the list of guys I expect to have a chance to get claimed, even though, and this is the one thing through all this and talking to guys around the league, it's a giant matrix with so many moving parts. There's hunches on who's going to go, but nobody's sure. There is so much uncertainty out there right now, and there are still some cards that have to be played that could affect it. We talk about Pittsburgh and Fleury and Matt Murray and what's going to happen there and how that domino is probably going to affect another team and who they expose. If you're the Washington Capitals, do you expect to lose Philip Grubauer? Maybe, because Dave Pryor, the goalie coach and the goalie scout for the Las Vegas, for the new Las Vegas franchise, was the one that drafted him and is big on him. But with so many options available, is Vegas maybe better to take a defenseman or a forward that the Capitals have to expose? Even within the organizations themselves, as much as they're trying to do their homework and prepare for this, they don't know, and they feel, a lot of guys kind of feel like it's a wasted exercise, all the hours they're putting into it right now, because like I said, a trade here, a trade there, a Marc-Andre Fleury situation playing itself out, and that's going to change everything once again before we actually get to the expansion draft. So a lot of moving parts and a lot of uncertainty out there.
Yeah, that's the main one, right? Like, you look at Pittsburgh, they've got both. They either got to trade Fleury or they're going to expose Murray, which I'd be surprised if that happens due to age. So they're going to have to wheel and deal him.
Well, the thing with Murray here, guys, is, listen, they can cut a deal with Las Vegas.
Yep.
They can expose Matt Murray and above board file it as an official trade with the NHL office, cut a deal with Vegas to not pick Matt Murray. But given what we've seen of Matt Murray and how good he has been and appears to be, as a number one right now and a guy with a lot of upside yet, it would have to be a hell of an incentive if I'm Vegas and he's available to not take him. We're not talking about like a sixth round pick. We're talking about real tangible offer to prevent me from making that selection. And the other part of the Fleury-Murray equation that a lot of people haven't considered is if they do trade Marc-Andre Fleury, they need a goalie coming back. Because unless they add a goalie who's under contract or a restricted free agent in the organization for next season, Murray still has to be exposed because the Penguins don't have anyone else on their farm that fits that bill. So whether it's in the Fleury trade or making a separate trade with another organization for a minor league goalie and then that's eligible or qualifies and then re-signing him, the Penguins still have to add somebody after moving Fleury, or they still have to expose Matt Murray. So again, a lot of moving parts there.
Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine, NHL.com, joins us. So, Kevin, you mentioned the waiver factor for Brossoit. If you look at organizations, young goalies who don't require waivers, who you think are the most likely to be drafted by Vegas?
I'll give you three, and two of them happen to be in the organization that the Oilers are playing tonight.
Okay.
Columbus is stacked in goal to the point where if there wasn't an expansion draft, you could see them maybe even moving on from Bobrovsky in the near future, or certainly not sweating him leaving when his contract expires at the end of next year. Korpisalo, Forsberg, Dansk. Dansk is overseas. His sort of light has dimmed a little bit, but still a potential NHL goaltender. Forsberg, reliable, technically sound, capable of playing in the NHL, Korpisalo, star potential. And what's interesting to me is because Korpisalo and Forsberg are both have to be exposed in the expansion draft and don't require waivers next year, I think the Blue Jackets expect to lose somebody here.
Yeah.
I think probably Korpisalo, and that's why maybe not a surprise that earlier this season I got a call from a goalie coach of another team looking around at trade prospects because they had a need and asking, you know, what did you heard about Jonas Korpisalo, which tells me he's on the market already because Columbus knows this is coming and is looking to maybe get an asset before they move him. And if it's me, Korpisalo is a guy I'm picking because, again, not just does he meet all the other requirements in terms of age and not needing waivers to go down again next year, he has very, very high ceiling. We've seen in Calgary, Chad Johnson, I know Brian Elliott kind of started to take over the net again, but you see the success that Johnson had, and a lot of what is good in his game is about patience on the skates. Korpisalo, in addition to being 6'4" and incredibly gifted in terms of lateral movement, might be one of the most patient goalies I've seen on his skates in terms of waiting on plays, tracking pucks, reading plays. He's got next level skill. He has the potential to be a star in this league, and so I expect him to be a guy that Vegas is interested in. The other one that fits the bill that's high on the list in terms of, again, exempt on waivers next year, but has to be exposed, is Anthony Stolarz in New Jersey. Already third-year pro, so he's got a little more experience, but yet you can park him in the minors. And if you think about it, even if Vegas takes three goalies, what's to say they don't park both of those guys and just enrich their prospect pool, their asset pool, pick a third guy to play in the NHL, and go sign a guy like Michael Neuver.
Yeah.
Who, again, Dave Pryor was big part of drafting and developing in Washington, and as I understand it, is still very big on. He's probably going to be an unrestricted free agent. Doesn't cost you anything. Don't have to waste a draft pick or an expansion pick on adding him to your mix next summer. So a lot of different ways it could go, but I see, like you, value in the guys who you can park for at least one more season because there's no point in drafting them if you got nowhere to play them. You're not going to go get Jimmy Howard and Roberto Luongo. You know, and bigger names and Philip Grubauer because you can only play two of them in the NHL. So I think those young guys with lots of upside will be very attractive for the Las Vegas franchise.
Kevin Woodley from Ingo Magazine, NHL.com, joins us. Kevin, Ryan Miller and the Vancouver Canucks, they've won four in a row. They're rolling. Jakob Markstrom was great in Edmonton on New Year's Eve, by the way. If the Canucks aren't out of it, do you think Ryan Miller has trade value?
That's an interesting question. I think it would depend on the needs. I think Ryan Miller's trade value was hurt by what happened in St. Louis. When he went to the first trade, first time he was dealt out of Buffalo, was at the deadline. He goes to St. Louis, and not entirely through his own fault. The Blues just got – there were other reasons they got beat by the Blackhawks. But it didn't go very well. The numbers weren't great. There was an adjustment period there. Ryan is a guy who plays with a little more flow, relies a little more on his reads, really thinks the game, tries to dictate the game at times in terms of showing looks and baiting shooters to do one thing and setting them up so that he's prepared for them to do the other. There's a little more, in my opinion, adaptation period required in terms of what's going on in front of him because of those attributes in his game than the guy who maybe, you know, plays it a little more straight up, plays a little deeper, a little more point-to-point style game. Puck moves there, I go here, like just pre-programmed sort of robotic style goaltending. And because it didn't go well, I do have questions about what the trade value would be for Miller. He's been excellent at times, but overall his numbers aren't great this season. Willie Desjardins, the coach of the Vancouver Canucks yesterday, the question was, you could argue that Markstrom has outplayed Miller at times, but the answer was he has outplayed him. And so, again, whether it's at times, which is what I think Desjardins meant, you know, if Jacob Markstrom's outplaying you and you're both in the low teens in terms of, you know, 9-10, 9-11 range of save percentage, Yeah, I don't see there being. He might be attractive, but not you're not getting a high pick for him. I don't see him being a guy that's going to bring a lot of value back for the Vancouver Canucks. Even though he's had moments, the Toronto game, he had a game here against LA the other night, and a team that, depending on Quick coming back, might need help, where he was exceptional. He's had those types of games, and he's shown he's capable of that. I just don't see overall body of work. I don't see there being a lineup for him, no.
Interesting. Now, with Markstrom, because he's played very well, why is he not getting more playing time in Vancouver?
It's a million-dollar question here, Vancouver. And, I mentioned that press conference yesterday. There were a couple of questions that really – the answers from Willie Desjardins left some people here in Vancouver shaking their heads. I mean, when he talked about Markstrom's development, he didn't say the important thing for Markstrom is his development. He said the important thing for the market is that Markstrom continues to develop. I thought that was really odd. I mean, there's a sensitivity here to goaltending controversies, and there are times where you wonder if they're maybe making who starts decisions just specifically to try and avoid those types of controversies. They said Ryan Miller was their number one going in, and when both guys are healthy, it's been that kind of a split, 3-1. Overall in the season, because Miller's missed some times, the games are pretty even, but when they're both healthy, they play Miller like the number one. And it's a double-edged sword because Miller needs rest. He's at his best when he needs rest. In terms of a team wanting for the playoffs, that would be the other equation is when he's played a lot here, he's worn out and his performance has slipped. So do you see him as a guy who can get you through three or four rounds of the playoffs without being relieved? I'm not so sure. Some people think it's a lack of trust completely in Markstrom, and consistency has been an issue. They seem to think that Markstrom is having the success that he's had because they're easing him into it, because he's got all the time with the goalie coach between his starts, because they're continuing to kind of modify and tighten his game with Dan Cloutier. The other quote that jumped out was that if we see him signs of slippage, maybe we'll change the way we're using him. And most people were kind of looking at like, well, don't you change the way you're using him and use him more until you see signs that it's affecting him negatively? So there were some weird answers the other day. At the end of the day, watching both of them closely, technically, laterally, the power with which he moves across the ice, the way he moves across the ice, the way he folds into his posts and the size that allows him to fill that space up to the crossbar, there are signs that Markstrom is passing Ryan Miller. And yet every time you're ready to second-guess the decision not to play Markstrom more, Miller comes out and has a great start. So Willie is a coach who has always liked to ride a number one. He makes no bones about it. The organization has made it clear that Ryan Miller is their number one. It seems that Markstrom's going to have to do even more than he has and widen the gap statistically before he's going to get any type of opportunity to take that over. And it's weird because he's the one you're counting on next season, unless, of course, they go out and re-sign Ryan Miller.
Well, wouldn't you be stunned? I guess unless they re-sign him after the expansion draft, obviously, because they're not going to expose Markstrom.
No, they specifically signed. And this is the other part of the expansion draft that you've seen. Al Montoya gets a second year on his contract extension with Montreal. To me, that screams leverage for Montoya because they had to sign somebody to expose in the expansion draft. The Canucks were the same boat. Richard Bachman is the goalie that they will expose in the expansion draft. They signed him to an extension this summer specifically so they wouldn't have to expose Markstrom, Miller being an unrestricted free agent. Bachman managed to, again, leverage because of the expansion draft. Bachman managed to command $400,000 on the American League portion of his contract next season in Utica because he had that leverage. He knew that the Canucks had to have him under contract or they risked losing Markstrom in the expansion draft.
Yeah, I don't see them doing that at all.
No.
Now the Vancouver Canucks are suddenly now 1 point behind the Los Angeles Kings in a wild card spot, only 3 points behind the Calgary Flames. Is this just a mini little run for the Canucks? Do you think they can stay close this season? What do you expect of this group?
I'm surprised they've managed to get this close. I mean, to dig out of the nine-game losing. I mean, don't forget, their nine-game losing streak through November, 8 of the 9 were in regulation. I mean, they weren't even getting points. The first one was an overtime loss to the Kings, and from there on, it was 8 straight in regulation. The fact they've even been able to climb out of that hole and get back in the race, however loosely you define it, it at least tells you that you can't dismiss them completely and outright, as I'm sure a lot of people have, including myself at times, that maybe they do have a puncher's chance. Then you look at their road record, and they've got a bunch of road games coming up. I think it's 5-12-1. They've been a very good team at home, but they're going to have to figure out a way to win on the road. You look at their regulation wins. I mean, most of what they've done is in shootouts and overtime. They haven't won 2 regulation games back-to-back all season. So all the signs point to it being very unlikely, and yet did you expect them to be a point out as we head into, you know, going into the new year, the first week of January, a point out of a playoff spot? So it's not impossible. A lot of things would have to go right. Maybe after, you know, they beat the Oilers the other night, despite being outplayed late, for a rare road win this season. Maybe the fact that they've split Edler and Tanev, they used to play them together as a top pairing. Now Stetcher has allowed them to split Tanev and Edler up, and Stetcher plays with Edler. Maybe that gives them better depth on the back end in terms of matchups on the road. So maybe they can turn this road record around in the second half. Again, I'm not overly optimistic, but I didn't think they'd be where they are at this point, so I don't see how you completely rule it out.
Yeah, you never know what can happen, but I look...
Pacific Division, too, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not exactly a bunch of heavyweights in the Pacific at this point.
Well, you know, people say that, but then when you start to, like, they've got 47, 46, and 45 points, San Jose, Anaheim, and Edmonton, which is better than the top 3 teams in the Atlantic, right? Like, obviously, right now, the Metropolitan Division is great, but the Central has Chicago and Minnesota, and then the next 3 teams in the West are all in the Pacific, right? I don't think the Pacific's as much of the weak sister as people think overall. However, I think because it has Edmonton in a playoff spot right now and they missed for a decade, people don't take the division that seriously yet.
Well, yeah, no question. And I think Edmonton also, you know, was so hot early, right, and has cooled off. Calgary, bad early, sizzling run, cooled off again here a little bit late. You're right on Anaheim with the point totals. I'm not sold on the Ducks. San Jose's legit, and then you know Vancouver. Maybe the fact that Vancouver's in the Pacific Division is why we're somewhat dismissive of them. And then Arizona. So you're right. Maybe doesn't get enough respect, but I guess maybe the Western Conference in general right now. You know, the projections for what could make the playoffs in the West are lower than they have been in quite some time, and I guess that brings more teams like the Canucks into the conversation.
Kev, great stuff as always, man. We will talk to you next Monday. We'll get back on our regular rotation now that the holidays is out. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you then.
Yeah, my pleasure, Jason.
Kevin Woodley from InGoal Magazine and NHL.com.